Okay, everyone, we're going to begin. I need a motion to come out of executive session and return to open session.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're in open session. Good afternoon and welcome to the March 12th, 2025 regular board meeting. I call the meeting to order at 4:00. Before we approve the agenda, I need to take a roll call. Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Ms. Wise.
Here.
Mr. Hayes is absent. Ms. Jones.
Here.
I'm here. Mr. Knudel.
Here.
Dr. Mastin.
Here.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and moment of silence.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I need a motion for the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Mr. Knudel. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. I need another motion for the approval of the minutes from February 18th, 2025.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Mr. Knudel. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Next, we'll move to the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. Brittingham. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here. You made the adjustment to daylight savings time, so
that's a good thing.
I showed up at church one time when everybody was letting out, so that's another story. Welcome. First, on our portion of my report is the construction update by Richard Y. Johnson. We're pleased to have Mark Johnson and Brian Bassett with us this evening. Gentlemen, thank you for being here, and the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. So we had one change order today. It's for Kinsley Construction, and Blue Herring will be subcontracting underneath for them. It's for $8,192.58. So there was foundations on the drawings, and they looked at the drawings and realized the codes had changed since the last time where the bleachers were installed the first time. So they beefed up the foundation. Some of it was owned, and this is what the difference of the cost is for the bigger foundation. Does anybody have any questions? So let's take a look at some pictures. Here are the foundations completed for the relocation of the bleachers. Installation of the drainage for the turf field. Electrical underslab in the mechanical room. Foundation work in Area G. Electrical conduit that's running towards the new football field. And the masonry foundations are continuing. So up next, the concrete foundations in Area G and F. The masonry foundations will continue, and underslab utilities will continue. Site working utilities will continue, and they will continue to work on a field hockey field inside the two practice fields. And after the sod establishes for a little bit, you guys will be able to get used back to that.
Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions?
Did you, I know there's not supposed to be any underground work in this area, you know, from previous sewer lines, electric lines. Have you hit anything at all?
I haven't heard of anything getting hit, no.
Okay.
But I can check with my guys tomorrow.
I mean, you would know, or HUD would know.
Yeah, we're good. We're good so far, and actually, we're getting close to the point where we're really going to say a lot of prayers and be thankful, because we assumed there was going to be a lot of stuff out there, even with all the thorough testing that was done. And to date, we're there, and we keep saying if we can get out of the ground and vertical,
right,
that X factor is then gone. And we're close to it. I mean, as much work as they've been doing and digging underground, we haven't hit any surprises yet. And good. If I've jinxed us now and we come back and we hit everything, it was nice knowing all of it. So we'll, but yeah, we've been very, very fortunate with that.
And with that schedule that Mark showed, you know, I'm sure y'all heard the world famous Dr. Carson podcast where we talked about the schedule a little bit. But it's a lot of continuing, you know, masonry and underground slab is going to be continuing for quite some time. But as we work around that key plan that you saw, you know, steel is showing up this summer in the first part, and they're going to take on three sections and then slide to the next section, and then steel is going to come behind it. And then as it works around this building, I mean, there's going to be a point where Mark's standing up here showing you cabinets going in one section and steel going up in the other. It's just, this building is so big and it keeps the trades moving. We just have to break it apart. So that slide will show a lot of continuing for a while. And we mentioned it on the thing. It's not like a house where you finish the exterior walls and then you're done. We're going to be doing exterior on this wing. We might not hit the exterior on the last wing for another 8, 10, maybe even more months. But it's going to be fun for you all. Hopefully you'll get a few tours set up once we get one vertical with no underground surprises, hopefully.
Yeah. How far out are we before the turf goes in for the hockey field?
I know Kinsley's pushing it as hard as they can. They originally said end of March, I think. Does that sound right, Bud? And they were hoping to beat that, and I haven't heard an update since, but we could find out. We'll give them a call tomorrow and shoot something to you.
Will, why are you interested in that? Hockey season is usually September, right?
Just curious.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's the first field to be really completed. So.
Okay. It'd be nice to see their very fancy bridge that they built out over there, you know, going.
Well, I noticed the track and field guys were on the track running the halfway because the bridge is there still, so
yeah.
They can't do their full practice. Mm-hmm. They're doing what they can. Mm-hmm. It's just a curiosity.
Yeah. As well. That's artificial turf, right?
Yes.
But I know that concrete and the drainage around the interior edge was really the last piece they were waiting on. So the picture that Mark showed, it's covered up, but the work was done underneath, and I would think it's really close to seeing those rolls show up. But we'll find out, shoot something maybe to Dr. Carson, and you can share it with me.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. Any other questions?
Questions for RYJ? As always, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
You're welcome to stay. You might want to check out the roof in the kitchen.
That's what we heard. There might be a roofing issue. We'll take a quick peek.
I tell you, it's good.
You might be there a while, so if you need us,
take your time. Let
us know. Let's know. Yeah.
You guys do it right, I'll tell you. Have a good day.
See you.
Let me go back and get
you. Next is our monthly financial update. Mrs. Hatfield.
Good evening. Today I'm going to be presenting the monthly financials as of February 28th. At this point in the year, we're at 66.7% of the fiscal year complete and 65.4% of payrolls complete. On the tax collection report, our February tax receipts were $67,091. This brings our year-to-date total receipts to, we've received 142% of our anticipated tax receipts, so we hit that 100% mark. This time last year, we were at 100.5%, so we're just about where we were last year. Next is the cost center report. Our salary line looks really good. The highlighted line in yellow. We're at 65.4% of the fiscal year complete in payrolls, and we've only spent 59.4% of our salary budget. So we're spending under budget on our salary line, so that's really good. Overall, everywhere, we're looking pretty good. Overall, we've only spent 57.7% of our total budget. So our overall spending has been consistently under budget, which is good news for our district. And that's really all I have tonight. Does anyone have any?
Yeah, what staff identification school climate? $50,000.
So in our security budget, we have it broken out into three sections. So the staff identification school climate, that is basically where we have gotten maybe some shirts or things for our staff to show that they are staff, and it helps kids know that this is staff, and things for our staff to help the students know that this is staff.
And is that athletic events or during school time or
both,
all the time?
Both, anytime.
No requirement?
No.
Okay.
We like, we encourage staff to identify for visitors or meetings with parents or students. We've nibbled around the edges about uniforms and other things along the way. And this would be the beginning of something like that for students at the beginning of the year. We try to give staff, Mr. Barter took a picture, there's one in the lobby of this year's high school staff, and having everyone in shirt and attire is I think important for the culture of morale.
So it's not a duplication of expense with our badge that they all wear, correct?
That's correct. That we consider that,
right.
Security,
and
identification also.
So it's sort of a duplication of that to be sure you've got enough. I'll put it that way.
I'd have to look and see where our expenses for the camera system and the badges come from, but it's not terribly significant.
Now, our security system, that normally comes out of the safety and security money. Mm-hmm. Like, we spend part of that money on part of that annual maintenance thing that we have for our security system.
The Raptor system.
And that's only a portion of it, because it's a pretty big expense.
Okay.
The only other comment that I had was, staff will mention local salaries. May is a prepaid month, so just when you think things are good, that prepaid month comes along twice a year. So that'll get a little tighter as we move through. Thank you, Ms. Sacco. District purchase orders, change orders, and vouchers. First of all, let me say that when RYJ presents a change order, we'll talk through that. We consider that, for the record, we consider that a recommendation for the board's consideration. So later in the meeting, if you choose to approve that, then that creates an official record that the board approved the change order that was presented and the reasons that were given for that, or we can answer questions on that. A couple of purchase orders for your consideration. I had to figure out what the heck some of these things were as we go along, and they are subscriptions. For the most part, the voice renewal system, $12,487, has to do with our HVAC system in the 700 wing. I'd had to explain to me that a motherboard went bad and that we had to replace the motherboard and other things, but it's also a renewal of that maintenance program. The other program deals with our phone licensing system for the school district, and so that's the purchase order connected to it. As we talked about the items for the footers, the bleacher system that's in there. We are also in the process and getting some additional questions answered regarding press box for the track and field bleachers, which we intend to recommend. We've gotten a price for that, believe it or not, off of state contract. You ready? So we have a press box for the track and field area going on to the bleachers that we're moving there. We have proposing a new press box for the renovated softball field and a new press box for the renovated baseball field. We had previously approved cement pad areas that go behind all of that, but we wanted to make sure that we had those press boxes in there. We have some questions on that, on those regarding the proposal. It is off of a state contract with an organization called Cunningham Recreation. The bid price is 360, not bid price, the state contract price is $367,000. And it includes the work associated with installing those. What we're presenting to you tonight is an information item about that, but we're also going to seek your permission that if the standards and the questions get answered, I'll give you an example. We're asking your approval for the change order bleachers, for the bleachers themselves. Putting the press box onto that system is going to require whole bleachers, if you will, in order to support the press box. Think of our old football stadium where the press box was. It had to have substructure on that, so we want to make sure that everything is tied in together with our structural engineer, with Kinsley, with the bleachers as they come forward. And so I'm asking your permission that if those questions get answered regarding that, because of timeliness and the need to try to have the bleachers installed, as to Mr. Knodel's earlier question, we'll put this right on the table. We'd like to have that field ready. We'd like to use that interior field this spring. We'd like to use that field possibly for graduation outside. So if I can get the bleachers done and I can put a press box and have everything done from that standpoint, time is of the essence. And if I get the answers to these questions, I'd like to proceed, and I'm making that in the form of a recommendation to you as part of the change order, purchase order arrangement. I'm in sticker shock, quite frankly. $367,000 state contract for three press boxes installed. I'd have never given you that number had we bet a dollar. But that's where the numbers are. We have it. Mr. AD has been reviewing it and doing a very thorough job of vetting what's contained within it. And we're concerned about a ramping system, handicap accessibility, all of those questions. And we're trying to get those finished as soon as possible so that we could execute the contract. So keeping you informed as our board as to how this procedure is moving forward.
So the press box for football, I assume, is high?
There used to be one that was high for football, yes, sir.
So this will, we're doing football here, be high again or not?
No, and if I... Well, the answer is yes, but we're talking about two different places. And can I ask Mr. Cano if you don't mind going to the site plan and showing the track and where the cutout area? So that we're taking the old visitors' bleachers have been dismantled, and they're going to be put back together.
They're already put back together. You go out there now, the bleachers are up. So.
And to do those and to put those in play. But the idea is to put a press box on the back of that because
on the top.
The football stadium itself, yes, on the top, the football stadium itself won't take place. The construction of that won't take place until after we're moved into the new building and the demo occurs of the old facility itself. So there's a separate stadium, which will be right outside the front door, looking that way. There'll be a separate set of bleachers. There'll be a separate press box. That's contained within bid pack C, which will be developed. We'll talk about that earlier. But this will provide a press box for track and field or any of the athletic events that go on the field on the inside of the track. Field hockey. Could be a football game or two. Down there this fall.
That field, since you were gone, that field's been being mined for soccer and hockey, plus you have the track and field. So there's three sports that are going to be playing there. Mm-hmm. And then there's the chance that we could have a football game or two there. Mm-hmm.
Right. And lacrosse as well.
And lacrosse is right. We did it for all the sports.
We're trying to, we see four little red dots up there in the corner. We're looking at also putting light poles in there, mm-hmm. possibly our own, or if the price is right, new ones for that. But for the next 2 years, our athletic events are going to be at that end of the property. One of the key things that Mr. Johnson said was is that just to the right of the track are two full-size grass sodded irrigated practice fields. To the right of that is the baseball practice field, and in the outfield diagonally will be another full grass practice field. Now, practice fields are like gold, especially this year has been incredibly difficult on our teams. It's been incredibly difficult on coaches, parents, and Coach Quillen trying to knit all this together. Mr. Barr, Mr. Athey, buses, Derek's that are involved with helping us with fields and programs. We're all over the place. We're in Millsboro this spring with softball. We're at Sports at the Beach. We're up at Frederica, DE Turf. But the point is that as these come online, and if hoping that they will be, then the amount of travel that our students and teams will have to do will be almost negated. Will it be perfect? No. Will we be utilizing a turf field inside the track for a whole lot of things? The answer is yes. It's a two-year ask, but once we move in and then the demo starts, then the full stadium takes place. That's a long answer for your question.
So the press boxes are not temporary.
No.
They're going to be permanent.
They'll be permanent.
Okay. And the cost of the practice field with grass, irrigation, versus artificial grass, which is to play on.
Yeah.
Artificial surface. Maintenance, cost, all of it artificial?
It depends on how you do your math. And my the point is this, is that when we met with the teachers, coaches, PE teachers, they actually wanted a combination of turf and grass areas, because depending upon whom you're playing, you're playing on grass, and let's take field hockey, and you're playing on grass, and that requires a certain cut and everything else. But to some schools we play, it's on turf, and field hockey on turf is distinctly different than field hockey on grass. Just is. And then when we're fortunate enough to get to the state tournament, then more than likely we'll be on a turf field. Okay. So this gives us an option to be able to do that along the way. We own the work that's being done for the practice fields, for everything else. What we're picking up locally are this press box, the cost of the lights, that was in there, and I'm trying to think. Press boxes for baseball and softball, but that's going to be paid for out of the maintenance set aside fund that we've also talked about previously. But it's a combination. In terms of the grass surfaces themselves, we went back and forth because the debate is between K31 and Bermuda, and K31 is better for spring sports because it greens up quicker. Bermuda doesn't get green until it gets really hot in the summer. And from a maintenance standpoint, that wasn't being smart about how you do the math. The lifespan of an artificial turf field, depending upon use, let's call it 8 to 10 from that standpoint. if I had to throw a number at it, I would tell you it's $1 million to put it down. The cost of maintenance on our grass fields, which will be K31, that don't require the special mower, that don't require the other things with it, and came recommended by our fields crew as their preference for maintenance and the assurance that they'll keep them game ready. And so that's the way that we went. It was even money for Bermuda and K31. The maintenance is easier on K31 than it is Bermuda, especially in the summer, because you got to mow it like every 5 days, and because it regenerates, which is also the pro for it, right? It regenerates itself along the way, but the window for play is much shorter.
And so the electrical of the lights, did we Are we going to reuse them or do we buy new ones? Or we're
not
sure yet.
I'll give you two answers. One is that we have done a contract for structural for the light poles with Pilot Town. We have done another contract with Geit to bring electric for the lights and for the press box on the back. We've also done some work with DBF on this work also. The cost of the light poles, we thought we were doing a favor and saying we have not four 90-foot poles that are in really good shape, according to the structural engineer. We could take them and put them down there. The electrical contractor has given us a preliminary number in order to put up the lights that may be more expensive because they're 90-footers and require a certain base on them than if we just put up 70-footers and had all new poles. We should have had a number last week on what that would be, and I'll give you an example of what we're talking about. Reusing the current poles is going to be in excess of $900,000. Putting in brand new poles, we believe, is going to be less than that. We're thinking in the 850 number. So to us, it's a no-brainer. If we can get brand new poles for less money, then that's the way that we're going to go. So, but we're waiting for a commitment from the electrical contractor, and I think this is haggling over profit margin is what I actually think is going on. So, because it shouldn't have taken that long to get to the point that we are.
Good. And one other question, which here later, you mentioned about taking your team to all these different fields and all these different venues. Has there been any problems with security or anything at all with that? So it's worked out well.
Our teams and location have been good. We've rented secure, I'm going to call them pods.
Okay, right.
And so if there is any equipment or most of the stuff is carried, mm-hmm. Our challenge, Mr. Barter can help you with this, our challenge, quite frankly, is Georgetown. Because we have teams playing at Sports on the Beach or over at Sand Hill, and so they're trying to get back through Georgetown in order to get to the 545 dismissal, which is now getting pushed to 6 because of traffic. I mean, we're going the wrong way at the wrong time when we're trying to bring kids back through. I would call that our biggest challenge so far.
We just got a larger one as they're going to do a little construction. They're starting the 17th, as the sign says, as you're trying.
Yes.
We're trying to make it,
And we're trying not to get kids home at 7:30 at night,
sure.
Because they come back here to pick up an activities run along the way. So it's another one of the hopefully very short-term hardships that we have, because we pick up practice space and those types of things, and we're footing the bill for that transportation, for the rental of the fields, and all of those things. But we're doing the best we can in order to be able to allow our students to continue to participate. Any other questions? There was a copy of other bills that we've been paying, I believe. Information items. Lost it.
The posters in there for architecture and contractor.
Yep.
Our wife.
All the contractors.
Oh, the second page.
It's just the bleachers.
All the payments that we've made. My apologies. Maybe AJ Bear, Food Equipment, RYJ, Nichols. You can see the amounts that have been paid along the way. Any questions? Last month, we had conversation about the 3-day Raven Academy, which, as the board is aware, we have a combination of credit recovery for students and also
a focused program for our rising eighth graders who've been accepted to the school on June 16, 17, and 18. And I've asked Dr. Donovan to share with you an outline of the 3 days in terms of how we're going to approach and what we're going to try to accomplish during that time. Dr. Donovan?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Hello, everyone. One of our challenges here at Sunrise Tech is that we have students coming from so many different directions. Dr. Carson often talks about in kindergarten, they give a certain assessment. I think it's DIVIS. And they determine where all the kids stand, and then they start educating them. Sussex Tech, ninth graders come in all over the place with their education backgrounds. One of the things we've determined is we need to get more information on them before they get started. We need to be able to schedule them in the right places, in the right levels. Mr. Barber and I have started a very lengthy conversation, joined some staff members in that conversation, and we want our incoming ninth graders, our eighth grade Raven Academy, to be one in which we start them on the right foot from day one, establishing some pride in the Raven community. Excuse me. We want to build excitement from the first time we meet them as we talk about our school. We want to clarify all the expectations, what we expect when they come here. And the key thing here is that we have a hard time getting their records from the middle schools. Some come right away. There are Wooders I know has struggled all summer to get the appropriate special education records to the program accordingly. Staffing revolves around that. So we want to make a part of this, not only introducing them to our community, but also diagnosing things and testing them. We don't want to do all testing the whole time we're here, and I'll explain in just a moment. We're going to do some assessments. We're going to do some fun things. We're going to do some learning, getting to know Sussex Tech, some CT exploratories. We have several ways we can assess. We do have IXL, does have a math and ELA component. We do have our own departments have created their own assessments. We have math and ELA teachers that would love to devise something to determine what they need to plan for them. Our math department chair, Jean Johnson, she's created an assessment that she feels is extremely important to identify whether students should be in algebra or geometry. So we have access to those methods. The STAMP test is the Spanish test that we utilize for our students because we have native speakers. We have students that have never spoken the language, so it's key to identify if we can test out of Spanish or whether they should start at 1 or 2 or 3 or 4. So that's important to know before the school year starts. Mr. Barber and his team are building a master schedule, I believe, right now. And so the sooner we can get that information, the easier we can finalize the schedule. And major clarity, and there's now the Delaware Career Compass Explorations. The manuals are floating around here. I don't have my copy. But we can take that opportunity to start impressing upon students the importance of identifying your career and what it can do for you as you move forward, because the four-year journey here is important. And so essentially, in summary, is to get as much information about students through this 3-day, full-day journey as possible, because that places them in the right spot to start their journey. The format is the schedule I provided. It's a rough outline. The minutes may shift, but I wanted to give you a glance at a 15-rotation type of experience. If we have all 375 students attend, and we know that's probably not going to happen with summer, but we're preparing for all 375 to come, and we've broken that up into 15 groups of 25 students each. We would prepare for all of them to come. They all have name tags ready to go, and we would adjust the groups accordingly as they arrived, and there would still be 15 groups. Could make some game time adjustments, but breakfast and lunch will be served each day. There'll be transportation provided, of transportation. And I've listed several items there that we will cover. We may take some things off the list, add to the list. iPad distributions up in the air, depends on transition to Infinite Campus and when students are in the system. But there are going to be some integration activities. We'll definitely do the CTE rotations, where we're going to blend that in with some of those assessments so they're not assessing more than 2 sessions at a time. We'll break it up. So we don't want them to feel like they're test to death when they arrive at Sussex Tech. And then our goal, we're evolving this, is at the end of these 3 days, we'd like to have the parents invited to come in and possibly complete, turn in some of the necessary paperwork that we want to get from parents. Because there's in those 3 days, you see nutritional forms. It would be really nice to have everybody turn in their nutritional forms so that Dr. Carson can get a clear grasp on our percentages. The health forms are always important for the nurses. And it would be nice if Ms. Withers can get all the, at least a snapshot of what kind of students with special education services are needed so that she can devise the staffing and make the request for those additional staff. So our goal is to also have time with the parents to teach them what it takes to be a Raven parent, what to expect with their children in the 4-year journey. And we'll review it, we'll refine it, we'll tie it up, and then the goal long term is that next year when students are accepted next year. The first letter that comes from Principal Barker says, congratulations, if you accept, here's your mission. You're going to come on this date, this date, and this date. We're going to accomplish this and make it part of the procedure. Amongst many of the other things we've established. So that is a snapshot of what we're going to accomplish. We're meeting Friday for the morning, most of the morning, to continue to hammer this out and make sure that experience is
good. Are tech teachers encouraged to participate or required?
They're encouraged, and our participation rate with our CTE teachers is almost 100%.
Last year. And do all students, I'll take the IXL math, will all students take that?
All students, when they're in ninth grade, take it at the beginning of the year.
But not these for placement?
We hope that we could get an assessment value from our rising ninth
graders. Okay. My second question, that is which do you find more reliable, the math test that you're giving or the schools or the tests for the home schools?
Home schools mean the middle schools?
No, where they're coming from, yeah. Mm-hmm. In other words, some schools have a different grading system than other schools.
We have found that students that are coming with Algebra 1, for example, in 8th grade from 2 different school systems, they're still not
right.
Different.
That's my point.
Yeah, so we feel better to go ahead and assess
sure.
with a standard assessment and then see where everybody falls. We don't want to put a student that's qualified for geometry
right.
into Algebra 1. And we don't want to put somebody in geometry that should be in Algebra 1.
So you prefer that they all be tested, is what you're saying.
The sooner we can get in front of this, the better. I'm doing.
And breakfast and lunch served to everybody?
And Dr. Carson mentioned it. We're going to have credit recovery going on as well. So we're gonna blend the two together.
And who pays for that?
We do. It's part of our summer extra time program. This is a modification from an 8-day program that we run last 3 years anyways, maybe 4, and the staff seemed to like the idea of a concentrated 3 days as opposed to 4 days 1 week and 4 days the next. It also is going to help us with expense on the transportation side, and we also provide food service for the kids during those 3 days.
No idea that when the cuts are going on in Washington, will we continue to fund this if there are cuts?
This is our state. We have extra time money. We also have a tax rate collection for what's called extra time. Match tax, it'll be part of the tax bill that you look at each year along the way, and we use those dollars to do that. Previously, we've used ESSER money to pay forward a long way. ESSER is gone, and we still have that extra time fund that we will use, which is exactly what this is geared for, to be able to be used. We think the program is going to give us more information than we've had in the past. We'd like I call it an orientation, but it's a combination of fun and data gathering and also exploratory, get to know each other and different things. along the way. We prefer not to replicate a math examination, so depending upon the decision of the team regarding the math exam that they take, because it's going to determine a placement. If you need to be in this group of sections for math or in this group of sections, because we want the fit to be the best. It's when the fit is off that you have struggles along the way. But it's also important to be able to have a device such as the IXL evaluation system to see how are we progressing? Are they making progress towards that goal? And so it's a combination deal, but it's not a duplicative deal at the beginning of the year.
And, you know, if we have trouble getting the information from the local schools, I hate to shift the burden on to the student or the parents, but what option do we have if we don't get the information from local schools?
I'd give you a hopeful statement. One would be that what they call the rollover, data rollover, is typically the second week of July.
Okay.
We're hoping to get this data 30 days in advance by going in June, and so that we can allow our folks that do their summer work to be able to get started with that. The hope would be, and you've heard of the new data system coming to town called Infinite Campus that all schools, districts are going to be using come the fall. We're hoping that when the dust settles, which might be a couple of years, quite honestly, that the transfer of student data through that system will be a lot more available, quicker, efficient, and that the student ID number could then possibly carry, you know, student data. We're hoping it comes through that process along the way. Schools aren't closed in the summer. That's probably the simplest way for me to say it, is that, you know, the data that you have to have in order to have a successful start, it's just a whole different environment.
It's interesting in medicine, which I discovered some problems with this, serious problems, but there is something called FIN, and it's a quasi-government organization. It's set up by the legislature. And if you, as a physician or a hospital or a supplier of medical care, become a member of it, you can get everybody's medical records through FIN. So is that what they're trying to do with the schools that you're talking about? Now, I don't like it, and the reason I don't like it is personally, if you don't mind. My wife had an appointment with a neurologist. Okay, it's actually made by the head of Milford Hospital. And I called and said I'd like to move her appointment sooner if possible. And they said, I see you have an appointment with a neurologist, another neurologist, so we're canceling your appointment. We don't do second opinions. Okay? So which meant, number one, they got my personal, or Liz's personal information. And the physician did not look at the information. Okay? And they, I don't know who looked at it, and I don't know who destroyed it, so nobody else looks at it down the line. So my question, is that what they're going to do with students, do you think? Is that the program you're talking about?
I would hope not, is my answer.
Okay.
And I think it's a version of an expansion of electronic, you know,
yes,
medical records.
Yes.
I won't go there in this conversation. Our goal is being able to have access to data instead of the staff here having to wait for literally driving over to pick up boxes and boxes of folders of, you know, K-8 records on students, that there can be an electronic transfer of data, confidential data. I want to say that word, confidential data, that then gets reviewed and helps us get started in terms of delivering the best possible service for our students that come into the school system. We're recipients, and we're hoping that the form of how we receive it and the timeliness in which we receive it improves.
Yeah.
And one last point. The data collected, whether it's an assessment or a team building activity, is a data point that teachers can utilize from day one with their students. They can program accordingly. They know what their class looks like as a whole in front of them. And then those data points can be utilized throughout the year during PLC if the teachers get together and talk about it. Administrators can look at that as well and see growth. IXL shows growth. And if there's not growth being shown, then that asks a lot of questions like, do we need to purchase some things, do some other things, have to change the game? So that is great to use, and the sooner we get it, the better.
And who, do you have restrictions on who has access to that? I'll talk about state troopers. You know, they just can't, or policemen, they just can't go on the computer and look up somebody's tag number. You know, we don't have reason to do it. Do we have safeguards in place?
Yes.
That only the right people.
Everything is password.
Are able to get into it? Okay.
The right people are given access to the correct information.
How soon before this June, these June dates, do the students know that they're coming in to do that?
Does that go out after the 22nd when everybody did the finalization?
Next couple of weeks.
Okay. So they've got plenty of time to think about this date.
We've sent a letter saying, the second letter this year, we're about to, I think that's in the hopper in terms of going out to parents saying you need to maintain your academic standing, and here's how you can do it, here's how we can help, tech academic coaching, that letter's going out. Plus there'll be a communication. We've had discussions about that earlier in the week, both in terms of credit recovery and in terms of the Raven Academy program. There's actually going to be a letter from Mr. Barter and Dr. Donovan, parents of the 375, of coming in about what the program is going to look like and what the expectations will be for them. So that's going to be soon, and you're correct, Mr. Canola will be. We're going to talk about admissions here in a few minutes. The deadline for student acceptance to Tech is a week from this Friday. 21st, so we'll have an idea of who's accepted to come. Now, because they've accepted doesn't mean they will come. Someone will keep both options open depending upon which way they want to go. But we're trying to communicate as much as possible with parents during the month of March in preparation for June so that they have a heads up. And maybe they can exert some pressure where it needs to be exerted, and so that they're child doesn't have to come in for credit recovery, or they can do these things. Another comment is that the 3 days teachers are paid per diem, as we have done in the past. There'll be a posting going out for Raven Academy positions. We won't be hiring all of the teachers in the school. We're going to have 375 plus credit recovery. So it'll be letters of interest from folks, but the hallway chatter has been that 3 days of commitment and is much better than spreading something out over 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So. Anything else, Dr. Donovan?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Status of architectural transition. We've had conversations previously about preparing for bid pack C. We've had two bid packs, site work, which is the work that you're seeing done out there now. Bid pack B was the building itself, which is what Mark and Brian were speaking to, foundations and work that comes on. Bid pack C is hopefully the last one, but it's deals with the demolition portion of the new school, the heavy equipment, renovation and improvement in auto tech, the 14 wing, the gymnasium, those types of things. We are transitioning services to another architect for BIDPAC C, and in order to make sure that everyone is on the same page and has complete understanding about responsibility and compensation. An agreement has, draft agreement has been developed, which would be include both architect teams and the district for review. It's been developed by our legal counsel and will be, I'm sure, reviewed by their legal counsel. And then we would, it doesn't include anything that everybody doesn't already understand. My experience with that is it's always better to take something that you understand and reduce it to writing so that when something comes up that people don't understand, you have it right. And to have that agreement and then to exercise an agreement for architectural services for bid pack C and officially commence that project. Informally, we're already having some preliminary conversations about bid pack C, and you can see the intricacies here. There's a relationship between A and B and C in terms of like where do wall lines join up, where do utilities join up, making sure the systems are all the same. I can tell you that we already have a contract with Davis and Bowen Friedel for the civil work. GIEP has agreed to continue direct with us, both Davis, Bowen Friedel and GIEP, in terms of the mechanicals. So the people who did A and B will also be doing C, and that's a really good thing. The only thing that has to come together is the architectural design work. It is my hope that by the April board meeting, I'm able to bring you, in a perfect world, two documents, one being signed agreement awaiting your approval to proceed, and the second being the AIA contract for bid pack C. That's an information item for you. More to follow. Additional choice approvals as each year after we do the lottery. Mr. Persilio goes through with a fine-tooth comb, or we get a phone call from a parent who says, hey, did you know that the student that was accepted has a sister who attends your school under a different name or possibly a different address, and we have to vet that, and we do vet that across the way. Last month you approved the $375 lottery, and I sat right in this chair and told you how amazing it was that we ended up on $375. So I'm here tonight to eat my words and tell you that it's $378 because we have three siblings who are related to current students, and we're requesting their acceptance because they're entitled under the sibling rule as it's contained within Delaware school choice law. I would also tell you that according to, where are we? Wednesday the 12th, according to Mr. Marcilio, of the speaking earlier, of the 375, 315 have accepted, three have declined, and 60 have until a week from Friday to make up their mind. And if they don't make up their mind, then we work our way into the waiting list.
So the three that declined,
we've actually got the 375.
Okay. Yes, I stand corrected. Thank you. Next.
Is there any way on an application form that we can avoid that, you know, missing those three students, or is there anything we could do for next year?
That gets into what our experience is, Dr. Masson. It gets into family dynamics.
Right.
And we'll let it go with that.
Okay. There's nothing we could do.
I wouldn't go that far, but I choose not to get into family dynamics.
Sure.
And so it's their responsibility to do what they did and to let us know that there is a sibling that's connected and they're and requested your consideration for acceptance. We're recommending that they be approved. Next, we have two requests for student field trips. Mr. Barger, please.
We have our first, whatever club, our key club, is asking to attend a leadership retreat conference in Arlington, Virginia. We'll take no less than 25 or up to 25 students, which is what their club is. We're not sure exactly how many students are going to be attending. We actually probably know by the end of this week how many will be attending that trip. They'll depart on the 21st of March and return on the 23rd. It's a pretty incredible opportunity for our kids to attend there. They'll either take a couple of buses or a bus if needed, or they'll take two vans if we have that ability to take two vans there. Approximate cost per student is $215 per student. That includes lodging for a few days, meals, and that kind of thing. The way they're raising funds is either through club fundraising. They've actually petitioned a couple of different lots of clubs to help support them. They've done their own fundraisers necessary for any student that is financially unable to attend that trip. We have some resources that we can use either through the club or through my high school funds that we have.
What do you mean by a maximum 25, not less than 25?
So there's 25 students that could possibly get
right
to it, but they're not all going to end up going.
Right, so if they have five, you're still going?
Yeah, we'll still go, yeah. If we have like five or six, we'll just take a van. Transportation. If we have 25 students, that's okay. Yes. Any questions on that trip?
No.
The Capital District Leadership Conference, which we are part of, our key club is growing by leaps and bounds right now. The past work is doing an incredible job with the program.
So the question is, this submitted on the 23rd, and we're just getting it today, and it's next week. So
correct.
It's just,
so we
I
were,
mean,
we,
if there was a reason for us to tonight.
We were a little bit worried about funding.
Okay.
And so we held off on that for a little bit until we knew that we were going to be able to kind of fund the trip. So that's probably more, I should probably want to do pending funding.
No reason to deny, but if we had a reason, you know, we could have done this.
Yeah. So that's that trip. The next one is a very unique opportunity. One, maybe two of our students who are going to be attending an opportunity in Pensacola, Florida. This is a National Flight Academy program that our students qualify for because we have a Coast Guard JRTC program. So this is one of the programs that our JRTC program, our Coast Guard JRTC program, partners with. We have the opportunity to send one, maybe two students down to Pensacola, Florida. They'll fly down to Pensacola. They'll be down there, I think, six total days over the summer. And it's a pretty incredible. If you take a look at the material here, take a look at the program online. Our kids get to go through flight simulation. They get to work with Coast Guard, air control, or whatever they call it, and really have a great opportunity over the summer. The only cost the Coast Guard is ultimately paying for the actual camp cost itself. The only cost that we are incurring would be transportation flight for the student to go down. Parents are in agreement verbally right now. We put that in writing that the student would fly down. They would take ultimate responsibility for that piece of it. But we would be paying for that flight. We weren't allotted it. No more than two students can go. We think we know that one is definitely going, two may.
What's the last day of school?
May 29th. Okay. So they're not missing any school.
They're
not missing any school.
You're not, no. Thank you, Ms. Farr. Board policy, JICI, Dr. Schoenbaum, second reading. Okay, Dr. Peel. Bring you this for second reading tonight. I guess just a reminder. There was a regulation 603 that passed in the state that required us to have in our policy that a firearm is a mandate, the student shall be expelled from school. We also wanted to include the exceptions that are outlined in the law that we did here on the back. My intention was, our intention was to bring you this with the term deadly weapon, defined as it is in Delaware Code, which you will find that in the Title 11, which is under Crimes and Criminal Procedures, which is more of like the Department of Justice or title. However, there are some additions in here that I didn't realize were in here that I need to suggest be removed. The first one is it does not include a BB gun. That is not part of the code. It truly does not include a BB gun, but we don't need to have that sentence in there. And then the other is on the back, starting with disabling chemical spray or any electronic devices, including but not limited to continuing to cause serious death. That's actually another definition that is grouped in with this one. So, and then in order to be crystal clear under guidelines, where it has Delaware Code Title 11 Crime and Criminal Procedures, that is has a strike through, but would add that back in. It's actually not 1457, it is section 222. So would make those changes so that definition of deadly weapon is exactly how it is written under the law.
So BB gun is or is not Delaware?
So it is not defined as a deadly weapon.
Okay.
Now, this policy is not meant to outline everything that can
sure.
be expelled. We have discipline policy that if we did have a BB gun, we would be able to take action. It's just not part of it.
So it would be expulsion?
It could be, yes.
Could be?
Yes, that's in our student handbook. That's,
okay.
And it specifically says BB gun or other lookalike guns.
So. Okay. So imitation and lookalike are included in a student handbook, but
correct.
Not in this.
Correct.
Okay.
And this is just from the code of Delaware.
Right. Yep. Sure, the department just said it. So, the thing I didn't understand here is, you know, under policy statement, we define a firearm and deadly weapon, okay? It's, you know, number three. And yet, I don't understand, we say a student who is determined to have brought a firearm to the school environment and to possess a firearm, why shouldn't that read and or deadly weapon, firearm and or deadly weapon?
So because that is not how the regulation is written that they shall be expelled. So for a firearm, it used to be that all of these type of implements were defined under deadly weapon. So they broke that out years ago to a deadly weapon and a firearm.
Okay.
A firearm is an actual, you can imagine
right.
what you would think of as a gun. If a student brings that is a mandatory expulsion.
Okay.
Or consideration, at least consideration for expulsion. Deadly weapon now is not mandatory. Still can be.
Right.
It's just not falls in that. They're basically taking it out of our hands. That there's a firearm that has to be considered
right.
expulsion.
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So we still are able to. We probably would, you know.
Sure.
It's just that's not what has. And so we have to have, for this policy, we have to have a policy saying we will enforce the Gun Free School Zone Act.
Right,
so we're
yes.
essentially restating what it says and saying that we'll enforce it. So, and then beyond that, we have our own discipline code and that we can take further action.
Good, okay.
Yeah.
And
these, I mean, this. Once we approve this, I do have to send a copy to the state saying that they have it. So that's
they have
kind of the check.
And exception, the firearm is in a locked container or locked firearms rack that is in or on a motor vehicle. They have a motorcycle. Does that qualify as a motor vehicle?
If you can't put it inside of a motorcycle, probably.
No, you can't, but you can strap it to it.
It wouldn't be locked.
You could have a lock on the, you know, on the trigger. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
we thought law enforcement make that call.
Yeah, I mean, this is the way it's exactly written.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think if we had someone with a strapped gun to the side of their motorcycle here on campus, it would probably call some alarm.
I hope it would.
At least we would, you know, ask them to leave. At least, you know, whether or not, you know, we're calling the police or not is one thing. But, you know, we just, imagine that football game, that's just one less thing we wanted to
do. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so. But
steal it. That's my concern.
Should someone walk in, you know, this is also increasingly important because we have the weapons detection systems now.
There's also rules under the safe school zone, which mm-hmm. there are signs posted out here, and I don't believe you can. I think our responsibility, I mean, obviously it wouldn't be allowed
right.
on here, and I believe this safe school zone also
would cover that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that they wouldn't get too far.
Good. And I asked question four. When I went through the metal detector here, when I was here before, if you go around the metal detector, there's a space. Is that part of the metal detector? Or you got to go through it?
Through it.
What happens if you go around it?
We don't let you go around
but you could, correct? It's not blocked off.
During an event, there would be a constable there every morning. If you come here, we have, I'm going to say, a team of six.
Okay.
That depends on the area, but yes.
Okay.
There's folks who are there, and usually there's a space there for where they're either looking at bags, they're going through and doing things. One of the things that's been the frequent flyer has been the three-ring binder. And so mm-hmm. we've gotten to the point now where we're doing a pass around. Three-ring binders are taken out. They come around mm-hmm. and they're handed on this side. So I suspect that the space that you may have seen was where the constable would be standing.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the three-ring binders are triggering that.
Well, you get into the discussion about to which sensitivity level
right.
do you set the weapons detector. If you set it to the point where nothing is picked up, you've got to question whether you have a functional
really? Right.
system at that point. We go even further about if taking the position that if we're issuing iPads, and we're building an electronic portfolio, why do we need a three-ring binder to begin with? Right? Mm-hmm. So there's conversations about that. I think Mr. Bogger, Mr. Dixon, and others have the level set to where they think it's good, and they've been incredibly efficient getting people into the building and going through the system. The message is sent when, in order to get in, you have to go through a system along the way. Go back to the story of the first week where we had a treasure trove of vape pens out in the bushes and when kids realized that they had to go through and they had metal vape pens. And so we had a bonanza on that week.
Have
I'm sure they got creative and figured out other ways to do some things along the way. I can also tell you there's been a sense of appreciation by parents and visitors from other schools who come here for athletic events, other events within the school. You know, most folks have the same position. It's a shame that
it's come to
you
this.
Have to do this, but when we come to your building, we feel safe. And that was the objective. And so hats off to everybody and implementing that system this year and making it work.
We've had multiple schools from school districts come and visit to watch the systems that we've established. They're willing to do the same.
And football games, athletic events, we have portable ones for each event. So we have two or three events going on at a time.
How about if we would tell you that we don't have enough devices for everything going on at the same time, but if there was a stadium event, then you would proceed through a process which included the weapons detection system in order to enter the stadium.
It's portable.
Good. Dr. Peel, anything else on this policy? I have another one, I believe, connected traumatic events.
Yeah, so there was a law called Nolan's Law, which was passed last year. This was in honor of a student who had a suffered a tragic end to his life up in Hokesson, Delaware. So it created a mandate for us to have a policy on how we would react to a school-connected traumatic event. This policy is not meant to be like the handbook or the play-by-play of everything we would do. We have other procedures kind of behind that, and it also talks about us having a kind of tabletop or meeting once a year to practice and talk about what our reaction may be. This is not just for students. It could be for, you know, any adults or any community or anything that may affect the school. So you just see some of the things outlined there. We also have who team members may be. Let's say we wanted someone else to be part of a team. This policy would not hold us from doing that. Of course, this is really just an outline to say we have thought about this. We have plans in place, and essentially are able to make some decisions about it. It gives us an overview. So this is a first read. You know, if you have any questions, like the other policy, once we have this completed, turn it into the state. This is one that we did not have before.
My thinking is frequently backwards, okay? When I try to understand things, I can't understand if you have a level one, the highest level of need, why should you have 5 to 7 school days for minimum response? Why would you have 1 to 3 days of minimum response? And the lowest level of need be 5 to 7 school days? I don't understand the order there.
So one thing that this talks about is funding. The state will fund for us to have extra counselors and that sort of thing in here. So if we have a really low level of need, we may only need those people here, 1 to 3 days. If we have a high need, we may need them for a week or more.
Okay, so the response has to do with how long we're going to pay them and have them on board.
Also, our own response on how long we would maybe implement some of these procedures. So
if it's the highest level of need, something really serious, we're going to respond in 1 to 3 days, I'd hope, or immediately.
No, it's not respond in. Is the response how long the response
will last?
Yes.
How long will it last?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we'll, in any level, we respond in
immediately.
5 minutes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Good. Good enough.
Yeah, yeah. The timeline. So yes. It's actually a good idea. Okay, how long may we be in this? We may alter school schedule. We may.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It could be all kinds of.
So we're going to respond sooner than 5 to 7 days.
Yeah.
Probably sooner than 1 to 3.
Oh, it's sure. I mean, usually this is an immediate
that's what I'm
meeting to get prepared for the next day. And,
right.
This talks about care stations and having kids come in and really use data to see how many students are in crisis.
Sure. And it's scary.
To kind of scale down.
Students, faculty, everybody, and anybody.
Correct.
Any other questions for Dr. Kill? Thank you, sir. J, Board Policy JFA, Freshman Admissions. This is the second reading. This is a modification. You recall last month, this is our lottery policy that we have put in play last year. At the bottom of the second page, Dr. Mastin, to your earlier question, talks about district employees and 20 hours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's outlined there. The reason for the policy change was up in the pink or mauve section. In the original policy, it talked about completed by the student's resident district. Had requested removal of that. We had changed that on the student data form collection. And the reason was if you think about 800 applications arriving at districts of residence, guidance departments, we're not talking about transfer of data, where we elected to go with the student data sheet where the parent had to attest that the data that they were providing regarding the record of their student was true and correct. That's the way that we've implemented that. So this is allowing the policy to catch up with our practice. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Yeah, I have questions worded here. Exceptions to lottery. Okay, siblings of current students, obvious. Children of permanent Sussex County Vocational Technical School, district employees. That's straightforward. But then when you say who teach for Sussex County Vocational Technical School District, to me that excludes everybody else. That includes administrators, it includes building superintendents, janitors, paraprofessionals. But I don't see why we need that who mm-hmm. teach.
Understood. So we could eliminate the first burger dot completely and believe that it's carried under number two?
Yeah, in other words, period. In other words, permanent Sussex County Vocational Technical School District employees, and if you want to put then who work 20 hours or more per week.
As a minimum.
But when you put in there teachers, I think you exclude everybody else.
I agree with you.
Or remove that first burger dot and mm-hmm. make it clear. Okay.
Mr. Eady, facilities update.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Sure I got a fresh cut so I was as high speed motor drag as possible. Get through this as clearly as I possibly can. So, appreciate everyone being here, and I will give Mr. Johnson and Bassett the credit for pictures this month. I stole some of their thunder last month. I'll let them have it this month. I did want to show the process on the roundabout, but because of SATs, we didn't have a drone plate today. So as soon as that is available, hopefully next week, we'll make sure the board gets all those pictures. But the roundabout is truly coming into shape, which is really nice to see. You see a lot of dirt and things out and about in the fields, but that road coming in to me is a true progress. Until we see some steel going up, that's my excitement for now. Sad as it might be, but it is what it is. So as you see on my report, just a couple things highlighted here. Really nothing too crazy this month, other than a ton of progress out on the construction areas. Natural gas is still, I say it's up in the air, we just don't have an agreement at this point. They are still working on some other projects that are potentially literally down the road, so that might assist us. So we're waiting for feedback from Chesapeake on that. As far as the campus site plan, obviously the demo is still ongoing, but it's the initial demo is nearing completion. This Friday, you might have seen an email where there's some restricted access where we will need to move some things, take out some concrete to allow for traffic to travel behind the school as we move forward. So we can actually dig the stormwater pond, which is near the old B gym, and come out into the road instead of doing that in two phases. Again, DeSolar is trying to be as efficient, as effective as possible.
Did we get word from the fire marshal? Was that allowed?
Yes. Fire marshal was on site. He was good to go. They were actually good to go with only 15 feet. We didn't feel that was enough to safely allow two-way travel behind the building because we do have student parkers back there. And honestly, some staff. Not calling anybody out, I'm just saying. There might or might not be some concerns there. Not looking at anyone in this room, but I'm just saying. So yes, we're near carpentry where there's an overhang. Really it's just a lean-to, looking at taking a portion of that down to allow a true 25 feet through there. The upside is it won't take away any parking spots. I know that was a big concern by some staff. So it should still actually give better access to the area back there and allow the construction to continue on. The field inside and the areas around the track are looking good. I got notification while we're sitting here that due to the upgrade in the curving around the inside of the track to accommodate the safety netting, we upgraded that to include lacrosse balls. They come at a high rate of speed, and they're smaller, obviously, than soccer and football. So to accommodate that, it pushed it back a little bit. But they are still looking, definitely before May, they're looking at mid to late April to have the, they call it rug, laid inside that area. So it should definitely be available. And talking with Coach Quillen, the track team is wonderful and very happy with using a portion of the track. Like you said, as soon as the bridge is up, they'll have full use. But most, they use it for start sprints and coming around the one corner, and then they reset to go back around. So athletics, Coach Quillen has done a fantastic job with keeping everything going. They were really the hardest hit with this first phase of construction and should actually get some relief as we move into later spring and then into fall as well. So fortunate there. With the main building, the dental area corrections, again, sitting here, I believe that was the email that came through from the architectural team. We had been waiting for confirmation on those updates. It was either dental or cafeteria. I didn't want to get into reading an entire email sitting here listening to all the discussion and questions. So I'll check that out later, but I believe now for one of those areas. And the annual facilities assessment we talked about last month was submitted the next day, so we should be good to go for another year there. So any questions?
Same question I asked Mark. Have you gotten into any unknown pipes, wiring in the demolition areas?
No. To piggyback on their response, there have been no major issues of that nature. Just some normal stuff as they were doing different things with the true spaghetti that we have under all of this. Some things that really should have been connected together were. And so when they took one thing out, it shut something else down that no one really knows how it was that way. Fortunately, we've not had any water coming out of electrical lines yet. So that's what we really are concerned about.
Or sewage coming out of water lines.
Not yet. So we're going there, but to bring up the sewage, we did have an emergency response situation. There was no emergency inside the building, but we did have a pump truck on site. The wet wells were not activating, the pumps weren't activating. It's an old pneumatic system, and when you have an air run system that's in a very moist environment, the two don't mix. So. You know, believe it or not, they put in a good old mechanical float system, and so we should be good until the new one is fully in working order. Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Thank you.
All right.
High school update, Mr. Carter.
Good evening, everybody. We'll start with, hopefully I have the right numbers here now. So I'm going to go with the 375 number of our students that we'll bring in. We're 378 or
whatever. Or somewhere in between.
We'll take the three.
So just a reminder, except as Dr. Carson talked about a few minutes ago, our acceptance date is what came up March 21st, I believe is that date. It's been an exciting opportunity. I've actually worked with Mr. Solo a little bit closer this year to learn a little bit more about the lottery process and acceptance process, and so it's been pretty interesting to watch that and kind of learn the processes in detail. Some of our students have done incredible things in this past month. This is just a mention. This actually will be celebrated in April. So William Flake and Christopher Morales soon will be honored as our State of Delaware Secretary of Education scholars. That dinner will actually happen in April. Those are just two of our top students, and they're just incredible individuals. We had some students that participated in the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards, and we took a first place in their presentation. Our JROTC program, I can't say enough about our program right now. We I think have two of the most incredible ROTC leaders in a high school that I think I've ever had, and everybody I've ever been. We've had an ROTC program, but these two individuals really do give our kids the opportunities and have developed leadership regardless of who the student is. Number of females, the number of minorities that are in the program is probably the largest number that I've ever seen. And for some reason, the ladies don't seem to be like our strongest leaders in there oftentimes. Emma Dukes is one of those. She recently received a Meritorious Achievement Award, and Emily was also highlighted as our student who responded to an accident, and there's been several articles written related to her. Emily's just an incredible individual. We talked earlier about the field trip down to Pensacola today, and you know, those two, if you met the two young ladies that may be attending that that camp or that leadership conference that they're going to be attending down there, they're just two incredible individuals. Just also got word today that one of our young men might be applying for something called the AIM program, which is held at the Coast Guard Academy up in Connecticut. He wants to go to the academy, wants to go to the Coast Guard Academy, and this is a young man that when he was a freshman, he was very reserved, and this morning when I walked in about 6:30 this morning, he was doing his paces in our commons area, and is there almost every morning working and leading and everything. So it's just an incredible program. Our numbers are at 100 right now for our ROTC program, plus we just had the evaluation with the Coast Guard. Dr. Carson and I sat through some conversation with them. We haven't got the report back, but if you get the opportunity to go, you know, see our kids or see our kids out in the public eye, it's just interesting great things. So it's just another opportunity for our kids. Our band, they earned placement in the Sussex County Honor Band Ensemble. Some of our students were involved in that. Ellis Garcia, Thomas Davis, John Okolowski. Our junior band members were Naomi Ruff and Vito Rez. They're also performing this weekend at the Ocean City St. Patrick's Day Parade. If you want to go down and see our band down there, and I think last week they were at the Milton Parade. So, tremendous sports highlights. Our wrestling team, again, just has done an incredible job. Don't tell Scott Lakefield I said that, okay? they've just done an incredible job. We see all the names of our students who have received some recognition, our winter athletes as well. We held our signing ceremony, and one of the things I think we're going to be doing in the future is obviously having some addition signing programs for athletes, but also doing some CTE signing programs, I think, is that going to be created in the future. Work-based learning numbers are fairly stable. They're at 170. I just signed two forms today, so those are included as numbers, and I think a couple days earlier I signed a few more. So we'll be reaching probably the 55-60% number pretty soon. Just incredible programs for our kids as well. So staff news, our administrator counseling technology team has been working on this wonderful new process called Infinite Campus that's coming down the road. There's some really good things and there's some very challenging things that are going to come with Infinite Campus. We're hoping to be as ahead of the game as much as possible. We're hoping to actually have our staff in June go through some pre-training, so that when they return to August, they've at least seen the product, they've had experience to kind of handle that or work with those products as well. Recently, the University of Delaware contacted us, and we've been selected to actually participate in a short study. About five of our teachers will be involved in that study. We at Sussex Tech has been selected because they want to know why our students, where we have a focus on CTE, also have one of the higher opportunities or have a higher number of students that actually go to a 2 or 4 year or post-secondary program. We're kind of an anomaly in that because even though we focus on CTE, our kids still have both of those opportunities. And they want to know what our program has developed. It's interesting, tomorrow we're going to have our ninth graders come in and work through a interview process. Today, if you talk to her, the day before, if you talk to our ninth graders, they're a little bit nervous about that. Okay? We're trying to teach them that right now, everything that you do going forward is going to open up a door of opportunity for you. And we want to prepare them for when they walk in the door to be hired as an employee, go into the military or go into a college of their choice. We want them to be best prepared for that. So that's, I think, the things that we do to try to make our students successful really kind of helps them no matter where, you know, what goal they want to reach in. Our Spanish department's participating in multi-professional development has been throughout the year. I think their last session is coming up next month. Our ninth grade transition team has been established, and part of that is what you're going to see tomorrow. And then we're going to meet again to decide what it's going to look like when our students come here in June, and then when they return later in the fall or early in the fall, what we're going to do with them then, and what we'll continue to do with them throughout the year. What I want to do is, in about a year or two or 3 years, never bring you a name to say, the student is not successful. The student is not making progress. And I think if we develop that habit early on in ninth grade, I think we're going to bring less and less of those names to you at the end of the school year. So that's really what our goal is. Teacher peer walkthroughs continue every week. Some recent events, we had the first ever, or at least first in a long time, a Skills USA logo competition was held here at Sussex Tech High School. It was well done. We had probably about 60 professional partners with us here that day working with our students. It's really preparing our kids to compete on a state level and then hopefully on a national level. We had a wonderful job fair with our WBL job fair here. Many of the employees that were here, many of the businesses and companies, corporations, they had just done a job fair right up the road here. I'm not going to mention the name of where they do. But they said actually that they felt they had more connections here than they did there. That was just they told me that very quietly. I said, did you participate? They said, yeah, we participated. We're actually seeing more people here. So that might lead to an opportunity for us to work together for something. It could also lead to an opportunity for us to continue this. The only question they had is that some of our kids came in their PJs. So we have to make sure we're working on our dress code a little bit more along the way. So a lot of our students were in their uniforms and did a great job with it. We had a few that didn't take it seriously, so we've got to make sure that those kids do that in the future. That's where that ninth grade, if we set the parameters early and the expectations early in ninth grade, that'll continue. We had our Teen Dating Violence Prevention Seminar. It was hosted by our criminal justice group. Student recognition for student of the quarter, honor breakfast was just recently held. And this week has been a whirlwind. You know, that's already in the upcoming events. Today we had our PSAT, SAT, and I'm proud to say that we had, I think, 95% attendance today. We have 7 students coming back tomorrow on their own accord to take either the PSAT or SAT. 3 of those are special ed, and if our numbers are correct, if we get those 3 to come back tomorrow or test them on our makeup days, we think we'll be at 100% for our special ed group. So we have a couple of makeup sessions that are going to be beyond, coming to next week and everything else. So it was interesting to see those kids that were a little bit nervous today. Some kids were really taking it seriously. So that's what our hope is. So they do well. Tomorrow we have our CTE pathway where our ninth graders are coming in and doing interviews, as we talked about. We also tomorrow evening have the Sussex County Transition Fair, and then our print design shows coming up. And then on Thursday and Friday, we have SREB that's going to be here with us, and we're doing a promotion on the day on Friday. So Erin Emerson Williams will be here with us and working through, and we'll be using her knowledge and experience to help us continue. So, any questions?
The only question I have, I take a little issue with, is the wording of University of Delaware has selected Sussex Tech to study, as our data represents a strong correlation to college readiness, even when having a primary focus as a CTE school. Number one, that's our mission. That's the first thing we studied, that book that you got. Okay, I can't remember who it was. Some Southern Conference on Tech School. And the second thing is it's prejudicial because to me, they say even with having a primary focus. I think that's a beauty which all schools are going to, these CTE programs, because it gives you a transition period between high school and college or the work environment. So, I think it should be with prejudice the way that's worded.
I use their wording, and I think what they're doing is I think they're looking at us and
saying, I know what they're doing.
How are you being successful because other places?
That's right, and admire that. The other thing that I've always had a little objection to is we've kind of limited CTE to the trades, okay? But I've always felt that there's going to be a group of students who are academically research-oriented, and I'm not sure that they participate in their CTE programs. Now, how do you participate? I don't know. But you go somewhere where they're doing research or, medical or computers or whatever it is, and somehow we're going to include those in our CTE program. which I've never felt that we have. You know, it's always, I think, our attitude that they are, the students are doing very well on their own, and they don't need more than just our academic preparation. And I'm always a little concerned they've been left out. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm wrong.
Do you want me to respond?
Go ahead.
So some of our HOSA kids, some of our students that are within our health professions career, mm-hmm. we actually have several students that are actually working with the Van Andel Institute out of Michigan. They have to develop a whole research process
Good.
Related to that. They're presenting it to that. So our students ultimately, you have the opportunity right away to either go with a certification, let's take a CNA and go to work right away, or you can expand that. We have several kids whose goal is to become a doctor or to go into research. There's two or three students that are actually working on that project, want to go into the research field, and they're using their medical background that they're learning to be able to do that.
I guess the students I'm talking about is, what is the difference between our total graduating seniors and the number of people who participate in a CT program? I think it's probably about 50 or 60, by recollection, who are not in a CT program.
All of our students are in all.
Okay, so therefore, every single student that graduates is in a CTE program.
Correct.
Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent.
Thank you.
But you know this, I'd like to, one of the points there that I've always had a problem with is to go back to a previous superintendent, okay, and what his attitude about Sussex Tech. Is the purpose of Sussex Tech to train people to go to Caltech, to go to MIT, or is the purpose of Sussex Tech to train people to be college ready and career ready, and also to work at jobs that we need in the community, plumbers, electricians, and those people tend to stay here. So, you know, the previous superintendent, I think, got crucified because I think his attitude was, we want to train people to go to MIT and Caltech. And, you know, that's why the previous one may have recruited the best talent, and we got burned for it. So I've always, in my mind, you know, had a little trouble resolving that, because I can't argue if you want, and maybe there are other school choices out there that are training people, you know, to be go to Caltech and MIT. I don't know what choice schools I'm talking about, but is there a school out there that specifically does that? I mean, we're doing it.
I can't speak to other schools. I would tell you that, you know, we have our mission statement. We have our vision statement. I would tell you that we're preparing students to be successful in their chosen endeavor, family decision there, and could be military, could be job placement, could be Delaware Tech, could be a four-year school if they wanted to go to Caltech or MIT or Rensselaer or any place else. They would certainly have the option and the support of our school to be able to do that. I
agree with you. And then one other question, are we making any progress on having the Coast Guard program become a CTE recognized program?
We're having those conversations with the Delaware Department of Education because it applies to ROTC programs throughout the state in terms of the career pathway. We have a new Secretary of Education, and that will be one of the questions that get asked, was asked of the last Secretary of Education. We obviously think it should be a CTE program.
Sure.
Yeah. And then we probably have some conversations about taking that even further. We're the only county without a military school. I'll just leave it at that for today.
And the final question is, the legislature turned down or tabled, you know, identifying us as the only school with certain legislation, FOTEC. And yet we have, I don't know what the limit is there, but we have 1,800 new schools. So where does that stand?
The current code, which we attempted to change through House Bill 28, was tabled by the House Education Committee. And embedded within that code is an enrollment cap of 1,450 for our school district. It almost runs as an oxymoron against an approved certificate of necessity to build a new school for 1,800. So a substitute bill has been promised to remove the 1,450 cap and to not put a ceiling on it and to take the number out completely. And I was asked, why don't you want 1,800? I said, because I don't want you coming back on me if I get 1,802. So we have a certificate of necessity and an approval to say that we would build the school to accommodate 18. There's schools all over the state that are well over their capacity, and I don't know why you put that ceiling on that number. It's never an exact science. Three more, give or take, as we went through tonight along the way. So the short answer is that there'll be a substitute bill. I'm hoping that it'll be introduced in the next several weeks. I've gotten preliminary assurances that it will be engaged in a positive manner in the House Education Committee, which will then get it into the system.
Very good.
Ms. Harrison, information items and additional recognitions.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm trying to be quick.
What did you say? I missed it.
I have an item before you.
Go ahead.
As the board is aware, under COVID and through the Emergency Procedures Act, we offered a Zoom opportunity for the public to engage the board and to sit in on Zoom meetings and board meetings through the Zoom process. There is a piece of legislation that's being considered to have board meetings be interactive on a digital process, because people remember when they were able to do that through a Zoom process. The legislation is considering there's one way to do it. We could turn the camera on the OWL, and we could set up on the Zoom. We also have the interaction capabilities to do that. I don't know whether the legislation is going to be passed or considered, but it's an initiative in order to attempt to further engage the public into the system itself along the way. I brought it up as an agenda item tonight because, number one, I want you to be aware of that. Number two, I think we need to, I always have preference of a local or a board decision about how to address an issue as opposed to something being legislated to us in that regard. So I'd like you to give some consideration, and we'll put it on the agenda again at some point, about the possibility of engaging the Zoom process again to allow for public interaction, whether or not there was legislation that introduced to that point. We didn't have a high level of activity when we had a Zoom process before. That can always change depending upon the topic. As we know, the tide can change, and people are always welcome to come for a public meeting and to sit in this room or a bigger room if necessary, or if they may have a particular reason that they just physically can't get here, and so maybe the Zoom opportunity would be an option for them to think about. So I'm not looking for any, I'm not making a recommendation, but I'm asking you to ponder and think about that. You may make a recommendation going forward. It's almost one of those policy questions that, so a proposed piece of legislation makes you think about how to engage that, and so maybe they're doing their job. It's kind of like weapons detectors, right? You send a message by saying, look, we may do this. Well, if we go Zoom to begin with along the way. There's been a polling done in Sussex County, and there it looks to be about 50-50. Some already have interactive meetings electronically to do that. Then there's Gary's rules for public participation, and that's a big long narrative that he can tend to get into. I'll be bringing that back up for an agenda item, but I'd like you to think about it as we proceed.
We didn't discuss this at the legislative committee meeting in early February, so I'm assuming it's just been...
It's recent.
Those since then, okay. Because I'm sure we will discuss it at the next legislative committee
meeting. I think it'll be headed your way.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
My apologies, Ms. Derrickson. Floor is yours.
I'm okay. Thanks. Okay, so the Delaware Advisory Council on Career and Technical Education monitors and evaluates the CTE programs in Delaware. So they recently visited our school in February, and as a result of that, all the data in each of the areas that they checked is being met, and Sussex Tech passed, so we're good there. And last week, our district received two separate pieces of communication from DOE. One was regarding certified teachers in the state, and the second one included a letter signed by attorney generals, including Delaware's attorney general, referencing the new federal announcements on DEI issues. On Saturday, our school was the location for the Delaware Kids Scholastic State Championship for Wrestling. And I understand that the parking space was full, and the commons was full, and the gym was full, and everybody had a great time. So that's kind of fun. Mr. Bogra mentioned, obviously, the success of our wrestling team and other sports over the winter. But last night, the wrestling team hosted their banquet, and Representative Tim Dukes was in attendance, and he provided three of our wrestlers, Dustin Elliott, Anthony Andrews, and Bennett Brumley, with a proclamation. Earlier today, Dr. Carson, Dr. Killen, I attended the Delaware Pro Start Student Invitational in Wilmington, and we got to see 25 high schools from the state of Delaware compete in culinary skills and workshops. And it's exciting to see. We didn't get to stay to see who won, but it was fun what we got to see. This past week or a couple weeks, our legal services and criminal justice technologies had 25 students receive their paralegal certificate. We've had two students selected to play at the annual Blue and Gold All-Star Basketball event in March, or March 22nd. We had our students participate in Science Olympiad, and we had students place 7th, 9th, and 10th places in that competition. Last week, we had 5 students attend and participate in the Educators Rising competition, and 3 of them won silver and 2 won silver, 3 won gold, and they are gold winners are eligible to move forward and participate in Orlando, Florida over the summer, I believe. And then you may have seen it, it came across today in the news press release that we had 4 students participate in the Sussex County Science Fair, and there were recognitions received, and we had one student who won first place for her work. Mr. Bogger mentioned the transition fair, the Sussex County Transition Fair, which is being held tomorrow. And then our JROTC will be having their military ball on Saturday evening at the Earth Center. That is all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
That's all we have.
So thank you, Dr. Carson. We'll move on to board reports. Ms. Jones?
The legislative committee meets at the end of April.
Okay, next we'll move to public participation. Seeing none, we're going to move on to agenda action items. I need a motion for the approval of the personnel agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Knudel, seconded by Ms. Jones. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of the monthly financials for February 2025.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by Mr. Knudel. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Next, I need a motion for the approval of district purchase orders, change orders, and vouchers.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Ms. Wise. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Next, I need the approval for the 2026 additional choice recommendations.
Shouldn't that be 25, 20,
yeah,
26?
You're probably right, I guess. 25, 26.
I'm so moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Jones, seconded by Mr. Johnson. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Need a motion for the approval of student field trips, leadership conference, and ROTC National Flight Academy.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Canoodle, seconded by Ms. Wise. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes unanimously. Need a motion for the approval of board policy JICI, gun-free school zone policy.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Wise, seconded by...
Question.
Yeah.
No.
Question. Go ahead.
I don't like the grammar in deadly weapons. Somebody needs to review this. Deadly weapon includes a firearm. Their parentheses are not appropriate. And they're very confusing when you read it. I'll give that to Dr. Carson.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Well, it came to us from another state agency, but we'll take a look. Does this come from another?
This is that it matches exactly what it says in Deadly Weapon under Delaware Code Title 11-222. So we can bring it back next month.
It's just the grammar and the parentheses are just not in the right place when you read it.
But it's exactly the way it is in Delaware.
Well, in Delaware Code, it's actually. So it's like a list, like a A, B, C, put it more into a paragraph form here so it would flow better, but we will make sure that it is
okay,
exactly
so
how.
I'll make a motion. We table it till next month. Anita,
I'm not seconded.
Okay. That motion is approved. All in favor of doing that?
Aye.
Any opposed? I made a motion. Next, I need a motion for...
Mr. President, if I may.
Yes.
Would you... There, you voted on this. I apologize. I should. If we put it in the list, if we transposed the information into the list as it's printed into the code... We would do.
No objection. I just...
It would remove the parentheses.
Yeah.
It does read roughly... I get what you were trying to
do. Okay. Yeah, I have no objection.
There's other questions. I mean,
then I'll rescind my motion and I make a motion that we'll
present it as it is in list format,
right,
with no parentheses.
Okay.
If you're willing to rescind.
I'm willing to rescind
make
my
motion.
I make a motion to rescind my motion. I need a second.
Did I second it?
I rescind my second. All in favor? All right. Motion passes unanimously. I make a motion. I need a motion to approve board policy JICI, gun-free zone policy, with the modifications that Dr. Carson mentioned. Follow exactly the state script format.
Mark,
you
want a
second?
Second. I don't know. Did you?
He made a motion.
Okay.
So approved.
No. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes.
Thank you.
Let's see. Is there any unfinished business? Or
no. Do we do freshman
one?
Admissions?
G.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that one. I had it marked off. Board policy, JFA, freshman admission, school choice policy, and building capacity with the change that was, we're going to change something related to item 6.
So moved.
Correct. Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes. Is there any unfinished business or new business?
Should the breakdown of our new students from the local districts be listed in our minutes?
You could request that, and we could include it next month as
I think
an information
it should be
item.
Yep.
Okay.
What would be the purpose?
I think the local districts have a right to know what students, are leaving their school, and if there's a predominance large number from one particular school.
I think they already know that.
I say they should be able to do that.
We could give it to you as an information. Yeah, if you want to know where students are coming from.
We got it already.
Again, remember, there are.
You're setting it up. We're not in control of that. That lottery is in control of that.
Oh, so right, exactly right. But we had
by presenting it out there, you're looking at causing arguments.
I mean, we could take a look at the number of applications for each school district. That
we got the numbers. You sent them out to us already.
Yeah, they already know.
Right, but I mean, we know. Should be in our board minutes like this.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. We can put it on next month's agenda. Since there's no unfinished business or new business, I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Johnson, seconded by Ms. Wise. All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Do you know I have trivia tonight? Oh, that's my job.